Welcome to Damnation Versus.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem at all. It's been a pleasure. You're actually, when I've asked folk about who they would like on, you're one of the names that seems to keep cropping up. So clearly,
really?
I don't know. I'm acting like I'm shocked here, but there's a real intrigue and interest about you in the metal scene. And what I didn't want this conversation to be is come across to you like I'm being condescending, like, oh, how come you've found yourself in our metal scene with your electric cello? But then when I thought it through, I was like, well, if I ran a classical event and I was interviewing Cannibal Corpse, that's exactly the way I'll question. That is why people are so taken aback. They're like, you're just strolling into these metal festivals with an electric cello and just blowing people away. So I assume that's why folk want to hear from you. So how have you been getting on?
Well, in general, you mean, or
in life, just that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been all right. I mean, it's been well, you know, it's been a strange year, and it's been a funny few months for us because we've had stacks and stacks of building work going on here. So I've been doing, you know, various session recordings, like interspersed. Actually, it's a little bit kind of like a Know About an album or something, because there's lots of pitched industrial machinery outside my music room, just outside this curtain here. So so I've been having quite a good time testing my pitch and then seeing if I can get any of that into new recordings, which some has gone in. So it's been good. Broadly, it's been very good, you know.
Good. You seem like you've been busy. I mean, with the live stream, and obviously you've had all the everything you've had to organise for your show that will be happening at Road Bomb next year, which we can get to. It just seems like from the outside looking in, you seem like somebody who just kept themselves busy over this fucking horrific lockdown.
Yeah. I mean, it's generally things are busy anyway. I mean, you know, we've got busy family life and things, yeah. But in terms of music, yeah, I mean, I've been very lucky because this has been a period of time where I've been able to focus on some of the session work that I might not have been able to take on otherwise. So lots of very beautiful projects I've been involved in. And also, like you say, for the live stream, I mean, that is many of my colleagues are very brilliant at doing live streams from home. And this is where I work. It's something that doesn't, I think, look particularly glamorous in a video. So I hesitated before doing a live concert. But then the guys at Hotel Radio came along, who are fantastic, and they've actually been doing this live streaming for many years prior to this, so they've kind of stolen the march, and rightly so, because they do it very, very well. I'm sure there are other people as well, of course, but Hotel Radio, man, they've got a good vibe.
They definitely seem to be like voices, yourself, Orange Goblin, anyone I've spoken to, or the folk that I know, it seems to be through Hotel Radio. So that's interesting that they've been doing this before the shit hit the fans, so to speak.
Yeah.
So,
which is why they're so good at it, you know, because they've got all
they've wanted to get it set up. So I like to launch into these things pretty much with what do I want to know when I'm getting these artists on. What am I most interested about? And when it comes to yourself, it's Hellfest 2019. And how on earth you found yourself in a black metal tent, plenty of thousands of people. So just talk me through the whole, everything, how that came about.
Okay, well, I would like to pretend that Hellfest were so blown away by hearing about me that they suddenly decided that they absolutely had to book me. What actually happened was that I play with Amelie Merker, you know.
Yep.
And she at the time was very, so we were due to play Hellfest with her folk song project, which is beautiful. And she, at that time, was very heavily pregnant. And her boy is now, I think he's about 16 months, 18 months now. Anyway, so back then. So she had to cancel at the last minute, as you know, as is quite likely when you're at that level of pregnancy. So Hayden, you know, Hayden Britland, he, rather than saying, oh gosh, what a shame, he said to the organisers at Hellfest, basically, look, she's got a ticket on a plane. She's coming out, you know, how about it? And I think in there, they probably thought, oh, stuff it, why not, you know? So it wasn't, I mean, whilst everybody was very nice afterwards, it wasn't actually the case at the time that they were like, oh my God, we've got to book this woman, you know? And so in a way, the thing is, Gav, it was very nice because I didn't have any time to fully contemplate what I was about to go and do. It was literally, I had less than 24 hours. I mean, playing a gig isn't a problem. Playing a gig anywhere isn't a problem. But had I actually sort of sat down and meditated on the fact that this was Hellfest, I might have probably been slightly more anxious. But as it was, I just got on a plane, got off it, went to the festival. Was, yeah, right, there we go. Okay. And that was it, really.
I mean, it was an incredible show. I was there for it. I was delighted for you. I was delighted how it all went. But first, I didn't know. I assumed that you would have been on site because I only heard that morning. So I thought it was pretty much the band was there. Everybody was ready to go. And then somebody pulled some strings and then you were able to go on and play. But you were actually still in London at the time.
That's right.
When this has been pitched to the Hellfest organisers, like, you know, and let's be honest with the listeners about the context as well. This was Cannibal Corpse or Bloodbath are playing, and then Emperor are playing, and Cradle of Filth. Like, this isn't Art Tangent or even the ISO merch stage at Damnation, where you could be there and say there's a lot of rhythm and melody here. You were in a black metal tent, and a lot of folk wouldn't have known that Micah had cancelled, because unless you're checking your phone, which a lot of folk don't do, I would have been terrified. I would have literally, if I was an artist that had to walk out with an electric cello to a crowd of black metal fans, I would have been terrified. So, I mean, you never had the chance to think about it, but how did you feel the show went?
Well, I mean, I don't want to sound like, oh, I think I'm great. I don't think I'm great, but you asked the question, so I tell you, the show went really, really well. Yes. It was, I mean, my goodness, it was such a warm response from a packed tent. And I mean, I suppose the thing to bear in mind is what would have been happening at that moment was Mirka. Yeah. Doing her folk song project. So it wasn't her doing her metal side of things. So in a sense, anybody that was there was already going to have expected probably something that was a little bit less sort of bombastic than Cannibal Corpse, perhaps, you know. So, so we had a chance to start.
You're getting small mercies here, Joe. Very small mercies.
But the thing is, this is what I say to people all the time anyway. At the end of the day, you're going to play a show. Come what may, you're going to get on the stage and you're going to play a show. And for me, I mean, getting onto that stage, all of the crew at Hellfest were fantastic. The guy that was that drove me to the stage and back again has since become a very good friend. You know, there was a lot of very, very warm people there. So already I went on feeling that I had a crew. Hayden was there, of course, you know, he'd been brilliant. And so I felt like I had a little kind of team, you know, with me anyway. And I'm a soloist, so that's what I do. I go on stage and I play on my own. And it was, you know, it's a funny thing actually, because afterwards I got some really nice messages, and there was one person particularly sticks with me, and he wrote to me and he said, you know, I look for violence and brutality in music. This is in a translation, you know, but I watched you and I cried, and, you know, and I was thinking, well, I mean, this just shows really the broad acceptance and the interest and the broad mindedness of people who go to these festivals or who are interested in this music. It helped as well, because at the end I had in Adderstone, Thomas from Cult of Luna came and played drums, as you saw. And he's great as well. It was another one of those. I thought, well, you know, why not? We've got nothing to lose. So let's just get, in terms of the fact that they weren't expecting me to play. He wasn't expecting to play with me, but said he would. We had no rehearsal, obviously. So we're just like, right, it's in 4/4. After I've done a Jimmy Page kind of bit, just come in and we're dealing with the goddess here. So play for her, you know. And then he was like, right. And off he went. It was brilliant.
It was. I mean, at the time, I watched one of the videos back earlier today, before I come out to speak, and I was pretty drunk at the time. I thought it was a great show, but I was pretty drunk at the time, and I think I was like 2 or 3 days into the festival. But at one point, the crowd just starts clapping as well, and you can see you got your earpiece like, fuck, you'd actually put me off. Guys, you're not rhythm here.
yeah, yeah. And they were
it must have been incredible. It must have been incredible. Because it's like you go and you do fantastic shows like Damnation, Arctangent, Roadburn, and get a fantastic response and maybe be blown away with that, but that wasn't your crowd. You walked into someone else's show and stole it. So it was incredible.
It makes it even more of a privilege, you know, somehow. So
yeah, and so at Hellfest, I mean, I'm a bit of a fanboy for Hellfest. I love the festival. I love what they've created across there, I think, for the amount of European festivals and UK festivals. I've been at more than 100 major festivals across Europe and the UK. And you go to Hellfest, and I know they own the land, so it gives them the opportunity to make it like that Disneyland for golfs that they've got. But they seem to do everything right. I mean, is that how you felt as an artist? Yeah,
it was completely smooth from start to finish. It was great, and oh my god, it was totally the best catering I think I've ever had at a festival as well. I mean, everything was so well done, you know. And
what's wrong with the corner sandwiches we serve at Damnation?
It's what it is, you know. It's what it is, but they have the space to do something like that, and
it's spectacular. You know. It's great. I mean, I when I had the interview I had with James, because I had the one with Luke Bell, who's the tour manager for Machine Head, and he was saying about how great the European Festival, and then James felt tangent was saying, and that's fair enough to say that, but there's a lot of grants and awards that these European events get that allow for a lot of hospitality that Download and Arctangent and Leeds and Reading and Glastonbury don't get. So it's been interesting for that side. I mean, my event does what it does, but does it small scale, and I wouldn't get grants for that anyway. So it's been interesting to hear from the different views of, yes, things are better in Europe, but they've got money available to them to make them better as well. So
yeah.
From one fantastic European festival to another, Roadburn. So they've commissioned you to play some new music. Tell us about how that came to be.
Oh, well, I mean, it's quite fascinating, really. I mean, it was, they, as you know, they commission artists, you know, and Walter sent me an email saying, this is just the broad gist of it, saying, that he has noticed that there is, you know, heaviness in classical music, and how he notices how there a lot of bands these days are using classical instrumentation, you know, at Tripticon last year before, you know, this type of thing.
Yes.
And he's keen to, in the proposal, he was keen to know my thoughts on this and, you know, how I would deal with something in this situation. So we had a breakfast meeting at the last Roadburn, and he basically just put this proposal out, and he said effectively, do what you like. I think I said to him, you know, well, what do you want me to do? And he said, do what you like. Yeah. So I said, right, okay, Walter, here we go. And I decided to, what I do anyway as a soloist basically is I explore, I think, heaviness in music, but in normally within the context of a solo instrumentation. But I'm not talking about decibels and volume level, I'm talking about intensity, you know. So what I did, there were several people I knew had to be involved from the offset, and the first, very first person is Jos, my conductor. So Jos has conducted with Capella with me and various other projects. He played with me in my quartet for Mono and At the Gates. So he's a conductor. So he was the first person in, and I was chatting with him and saying, look, I'm going to do this. And we were talking about it and thinking, okay, I'm going to write for brass. I have to write for brass because I want this heft of sound. And so I wrote for there's a Dutch ensemble called the New Trombone Collective, 21 trombonists. I've written for 8 of them, so we've got 8 trombones, male vocal, female vocal, two orchestral percussionists, pianist, electric cello and electric violin. I think that's it. And it's a piece of music which is it's called The Cartographer, and it's approximately 45 to 50 minutes in length. It's sort of like what I would normally do, like with 5 incantations or something. It's a continuous thing, but it is, if you like, split into movements, but we will perform it in a whole. And I wrote I wrote a piece of prose, 5-line piece of prose. And then I put this through one of my musical grid systems. And then like when you make a magic sigil, like a visual one. So then I took out all the consonants, the vowels, sorry, and the conjunction. And then I had what was left was this theme, which became the basis for the entire piece of music. Now, often I will write this way, but most of the time, the piece of music will start with just say 3 notes, or the DNA, as I call it, is a very, very small thing. With this, it was a whole theme that the violin plays, and that's what the entire piece was built from. So very quickly, I wrote this piece, and we recorded it in October, just gone. We managed to get in between the two windows of lockdowns and shenanigans.
Yeah. Yeah.
We went to Groenland Studios in Hilversum, the whole ensemble, and we did it and we recorded it, and we're just mixing it at the moment. So when we perform it, we will also have a performance, a recorded performance, which is in the classical world, this is very, very unusual. You would very rarely get a premiere that has an accompanying recording with it. So, really? You know, we've done all right, really.
Yeah, I mean, I hope I get back across. I love Walter. He's like a crazy old uncle.
I love him so much.
You know, I don't know him that well. I know, like, Becky, our former press officer, she had myself and Paul across to Roadburn last year, the year before. And I briefly met him, and I've had some conversations with him when we both booked Warning, just about the sort of announcement date. So I've had very little, but you get too many promoters talk about curating an event, and I always feel it's a bit overblown. I mean, I'm a spit and sawdust kind of promoter, and I'm a spit and sawdust kind of guy. You know, it's like you kind of you get what you get, and that's he does curate an event.
Yeah.
I mean, he puts everything into it. I book some bands to come in to play a sold out gig. He really puts his life and heart and soul into it. So
great
to see.
I think you're being too dismissive of yourself there, but your point about Walter, I agree with totally as well. His passion is music and new music and creation of you know, so making new art, basically.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that's the ethos of Roadburn as well, which is why there's many collaborations, interesting pairings are made, and all sorts of things are happening, and why basically I suppose they were, I mean, it was a great compliment, but they were confident enough to say to me, do what you like, because presumably they knew what I have done in the past, and they thought, well, you know, give her a bit of rope, see what happens.
It must be great to get to that stage as well. Well, I mean, I feel that a wee bit that Damnation has got enough trust from the fan base that we can go and say, Joe Quayle, you come and play the Death Metal Festival.
Precisely.
There's is like the giant version, like, we're just going to go and take artists and just stick them in. You can see why, because once you've done that 1, 2, 3 times, you're getting into small churches and great, the Coping Hall, whatever it's called, down the road, and you're just getting that vibe from you. Like, you trust Roadburn's going to put on that weekend. And a lot of people that I know, that's their weekend of the year. That's their go-to festival. I'd love to have, I don't know if Walter's the kind of guy who does podcasts. He strikes me as the kind of guy who wouldn't. But it'd be interesting to have a chat with him at some point, I suppose.
Oh, you should. He does do them, and you should. That would be really interesting to have two festival organisers chatting, you know, because I think people would find that fascinating. But you, Damnation is the same. I mean, what you've got, basically, is you've, it's a bit commercial, but both of you have a brand that people trust. So in a way, it doesn't really matter who's on your lineup at the top or the middle or the bottom, because the people that come to your festival, people that come to Damnation, know that they will enjoy what is going on because they trust you, and they trust the years that the festival's been running, and they trust the brand, if you like. It's the same with Roadburn.
Yeah,
and
no,
that's
I get what you're
a great position to be in.
I appreciate you saying that. I do see that from a business standpoint, that sense that you put an event and it sells half the tickets a year in advance, because you're like, people are trusting, and you get a lot of fans that are coming, and the headliners are always going to sell tickets, but there's definitely a section of the Damnation fan base that are like, who are these bands that are on at the bottom ends of these bills? Because we've found some of our favourite band are employed to serve as Venom Prisons and Conjurers. 2, 3, 4 years ago, we found them there, and as the bands have come up, the first chance we got to see them was the likes of Damnation. So, no, I appreciate you saying, I can be a wee bit, I did get not a complaint for a guy, but I asked somebody how they would have thought about the podcast, and they said, the thing kind of pisses me off is you keep putting Damnation down, like it's there. So, but then you've just done the same yourself. Like I said about you, you said, look, I don't want to sound big headed or like that blew Hellfest away. And it's difficult to come up with things like this and say, oh, my festival's fucking brilliant, or I'm sure you're difficult to say, I went on Hellfest and I played an absolute storm, or you know, it's like it's. In your head, you're a bit like
that's why you need to have a team with you, don't you? Because I always think it's really difficult to, when you're having conversation with people, it's difficult to talk about music. Like I explained the cartographer to you, and I'm well aware the words are coming out of my mouth, and I'm thinking this is so pretentious. But yeah,
and also I have no idea.
what else are you going to say? But then you need to have people like Hayden, for example, who says, Just put her on. She won't mess up. It's fine. Don't worry. Yep. You know, all words to that effect. But
yeah.
But also, I mean, it's interesting because you see with Damnation and with Roadburn as well. But with Damnation Festival, I think that the people that buy the tickets, so the people you're talking about who will buy a year in advance without knowing anyone that's on the bill, is because they are actual genuine music fans. They're not at a festival because they want to get out of their brains and rave all night. Perhaps they do, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that this scene encourages what did you call it? Like a real it's a commitment, it's an investment from the people who come and they want to hear what's going on. And they can say very good, thank you, or not my cup of tea. But they will give it time. They will listen, and that's the big difference. I think it's nothing is throwaway somehow in this scene. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. The biggest compliment for Damnation, or the biggest buzz out of it, isn't the fact that it sells out as much as that is good, great. It's the fact that the smaller stages are packed for the opening bands. Yes. It wouldn't be difficult as a promoter to sell all those tickets for a couple of big bands. I mean, I could take a full budget and just go and blow it on two big bands. It would sell 3,000-4,000 tickets, but we don't. What we do is we say, right, okay, well, here's the bands with it, but we also hope that 600 people are going to go to fourth stage when it opens, because surely that's the whole point of doing a festival. Otherwise, it's just a big band and a support cast. So that's the bit I really enjoy about Damnation. But before we heap too much praise on me and Damnation, let's share some of the love with Art Tangent. So that's when I first saw you. Blown away, thought it was a great set, and then Hayden obviously got in touch and asked about playing Damnation, and that worked as well. But next year you're due to play with Howard Kenny. Tell me a wee bit about that. What is that?
Well, so Howard and I met when we both of us played for Taka from Mono, when Taka did his Behind the Shadow Drops thing. And is right, I love improvisation, and it's fairly well documented in interviews that I give or conversations that I hate rehearsing, basically. I think that's why I'm a soloist, actually, because it's like the thought of going into a studio, oh my god, you know. And anyway, so I said to Taka, I would dearly love to play for you, but I don't have, and it's true, I didn't have very much time to prepare and carefully write a set. So I said, look, I will listen to your music, and I will give you, if you like, an improvised response, and it will be a performance, and I will make sure it's that way, but I can't give you note for note, you know, I'm going to play B flat for 3.5 beats and this, that, and the other, or something. So he said, fine. Howard has a similar approach. He had thankfully learned the music well, but he still has this real freedom in his playing. Anyway, the long and short of it, we got on like a house on fire, and we kept saying, god, it would be really funny just to do, why don't we just do something? But because neither of us has much time, we both have families, you know. So anyway, we just thought, well it'd be great to do an improvised project together. And then lo and behold, we ended up getting a prime time slot on one of the stages at Arctangent. So now we're thinking, this is not 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. We have to think about what we're going to do here, because we need to shape this set, and we also need to kind of ramp it up so it ends fairly kind of like foot to the floor banging, if you like, because otherwise it's going to be a wet fish. So so we've gone from it being, you know, completely improvised, and Howard does loads of stuff and fascinating stuff with synths and analog synth modeling and stuff like that. He's also multi-instrumentalist. So basically I've got the easy ride here because I'm just going to turn up and play my cello, you know. And Howard is going to play about 100 instruments, but I may play some keyboards. I have a big passion for analog synths as well. So, well, I have an analog modeling synth. It's an old Access Virus. So I might bring that with me and just do a bit of, what's that band called? Oh my God. There was a band, I bought it because I went to see a band whose name completely escapes me now, but they were one of these, they used to play them a lot at Slime Light, and I've completely forgotten their name. Apoptima Berserk, that's it.
Right.
So, yeah, way back when. Anyway, so that got me all into the kind of analog synth stuff, you know. And so I have a secret little passion for arpeggiations and kind of like decent kick drums, you know, fake kick drums. Anyway, so that's to answer your question. That's what we're doing.
I'm looking forward to that too. I mean, it sounds like you've got. This is the optimistic podcast. 2021, we're all getting our shows, we're all getting our festivals. I am not entertaining any nonsense about has not seen live music, or else I'm going to throw this Mac off a wall. So I'm looking forward to these great shows. It's going to be fantastic. So to wrap up the sort of festivals and Joe Quayle, let's come back to Damnation. And you, playing Arctangent's one thing, playing Roadburn even is maybe another thing, but Damnation is, no matter what way you slice it, the top bands are At the Gates, Carcass. I mean, we do have a stage devoted to music that's not that, but you really need to know about Damnation to know that stage is available with those types of bands. So when did it first cross your path, this idea that you were going to come and play this grindcore festival with your electric cello?
Well, again, I mean, it was Hayden, as you mentioned before. I mean, Hayden, for anybody that's been living on the moon, Hayden is my booking agent, a close friend of yours, close friend of mine, and many people. So he suggested it, and I thought when he said about it, because we talked about it the previous year, I think, and then it didn't quite get up the flagpole. It was quite late in the day, and then the following year, when with OPEF, I was on the lineup confirmed very early.
Yeah.
So that's when it was a bit real then, and I was like, well, okay, so I am actually going to do this. And I fully expected, you know, people can sometimes be internet funny, and I fully expected people to say, what the hell is she doing on there, you know, or something. But nobody did. No. Or they may have thought it, but they were just too polite to mention it. But I thought to myself, Christ, what am I going to do here? You know, it's not because also Leeds was my home for many years. That was my, right. That was my university. You know, it was a lot of history there, you know. Damnation is big festival, big name and big bands and lots of people. And there I am again on my own. Anyway, it was, I knew what set I was going to play quite early on, because I thought I can't, much as I think I would have liked to play something like Rhea Pavan or one of the slow ones, because I think your audiences would have enjoyed it, but I had to go in all guns blazing and come off again after 40 minutes. So, you know, it was, so I tried to plan a set that I thought would be appropriate for that audience, not tailored to them, but appropriate, given that I'm doing something which is not Venom Prison and it's not Opeth, you know, but it's just following its own path. But, you know, I also wanted to be respectful of the fact that it is Damnation Festival, so it's got to have some heft, you know.
Yeah, and also you get people wandering into that room that are saying, oh, we're going to give this artist, who they might not even know that's going to be someone standing up there with an electric cello. So they're kind of walking into it as well. You're a bit like, from the artist's point of view, you're thinking, I might have a couple of minutes to show these guys what I'm all about.
And there's not
going to be an 8 minute or 9 minute one where you're going to really need to be invested in Joe Quayle if you're going to hang about for that too.
So how
was it then? The room was packed. I was there. So it looked amazing. Yeah.
It was amazing. It was one in, one out, apparently. That's what the security guard told me afterwards. Yeah, it was great. I mean, God, what a vibe, you know. And it was, Lovely audience. I mean, what was particularly nice was in the first couple of rows, I saw some people that I knew. So there was some people had come along, you know, so, and that was a little bit of comfort as well, you know, because it was like, well, I can play for you and you're my friend. And then you look up and then you realize everybody's your friend somehow, because they're all there like waving their arms and going crazy, and they're so respectful as well. I mean, that was the funny thing, because there are moments when, like in Adderstone, where I'm playing away and then the whole thing completely stops. And in those moments, you know where you are with your audience, because you can feel them. It's a tangible thing. Like, it's really weird, Gav. It's like I can almost touch this sensation, you know, but you know, it, like some kind of weird umbilical cord, you know, when people are with you.
Yeah.
And they were there with me, you know, and I felt very privileged.
Yeah, I mean, it was an absolute pleasure to have you. Look forward to having you back 1 year.
Love that.
Nick Sampson, is that the name?
Yeah.
The guitarist. And then the drummer,
God.
The Vintage Caravan.
So, Steffi from Vintage Caravan, yeah.
What was going on there? Was that like on the day, let's do this, or pre-planned, or what happened?
Well, Nick is a brilliant, brilliant guitarist, and he played on my album Exolve. He was the player for the solo on Mandrill Cantus. And when I told him that I was playing Damnation Festival, he was like, I have to come and I have to play. It's like, brilliant, come and play, you know. So he came and played, and he's such a phenomenal guitarist. I mean, he is destined for very, very great things, that guy. He really is.
Yeah.
A very nice man too. Anyway, so he played on Mandrill Cantus, and I said, while you're here, you know, I'm gonna end with Adderstone, and it's in C, and again gave him the speech, but of course there was no rehearsal for this either. And I love players like this. He's like, yeah, no problem. You know, it's like, brilliant, I love you, let's get on stage. And Steffi, he from Vintage Caravan, we asked him if he would please play drums as well for it, exactly the same basis. No rehearsal, it's in 4/4. Don't know what the hell's going to happen, but basically you can't really go wrong, because at the end of it, it's just this big cacophony of, you know, it's this real kind of triumphant heralding moment of the cresting of the wave and the goddess is riding. And basically just play with your heart and you're going to be fine. You know what I mean? So it's meticulous is not the bag here. And so he did it. So these two dudes, which I just said to the audience, right, just so you know, we haven't done this before. We're gonna play Adderstone now for you. And there are a few people that knew it, like, oh, yeah. And we did it. And I turn around at one point and I'm looping. So don't forget, this is the other little kind of curveball, is I'm live looping at the same time.
Yeah.
So they have to, whilst being euphoric and glorious, they also have to stay in time with me.
Yeah.
So no, it's not, you know, no pressure. But I turn round, just because it's so rare for me to have people on stage, to take that moment of enjoyment, and I can come away, I can look back. And there's these two people who are absolutely at the top of their mastery of their instruments, playing their hearts out, and I just felt like the luckiest person in the world. And the fact that they've both done it, neither of them with any rehearsal, both of them with just pure courage and joy. And these are people I want with me, you know.
I'm glad it all came together so well for you. I'm glad it came for me as a promoter and a fan, and then everyone in the venue. And then you appear with Venom Prison. So people who don't even know who Jo Quayle is at this point, like, shit, there's two. She's everywhere. She's now with a death metal band. So what happened there? How did you end up on stage doing the intro for Venom Prison?
I think that came, that must have come through Becky, I think. Well, probably Hayden as well, but because Becky's quite involved with Venom Prison. Anyway, I'm not sure how exactly the contact came, but they wanted to have some cello. Now, first of all, Ben from Venom Prison had written a piece of music implementing metaphysics of morals for solo cello. And he said to me, this is written, please will you play this during our concert? It's like an introduction to the track itself. Plus, at the very start of their gig, they wanted some cello. Now, so I said, yes, of course. And I learned this piece of music which is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It's a wonderful, if any cellists are out there, this is a very, very great piece, short piece of contemporary music for solo cello, and I would recommend listening to it and, you know, playing it. When I came to play for them, we did the introduction, but fine. And then when it came to doing, I went off stage and then came back on stage for this particular piece, and there was some issue with the sound, and we tried, couldn't get the sound to work. So in the end, it was just like, right, they got on with the set. But then I did play it for them subsequently on a live stream I did for Chaos Theory, where I played some Bach and a piece of mine, and I played the Venom Prison piece as well, but I played that on acoustic cello.
Right.
But it's brilliant. And the funny thing is, I did say this to them as well. I mean, prior to watching them on stage and being with them on stage, I had no knowledge of their music, really. And it wouldn't have been something I would have naturally gravitated towards. But I saw that performance, and my God, I was blown away. Totally had my eyes opened to a completely new side, a new style of performance, delivery. I mean, Larissa is a very, very powerful woman, very powerful vocal. But all of them, the musicality that's involved, that I think, being uneducated about this, I may have, if I'd listened to 10 seconds, I may have written it off. And now I will never do that again, because I can see, it doesn't have to be structurally fascinating to interest me. I don't mean that. But what I mean is I learned a great deal by watching this performance and watching these musicians, these masters playing. And they're really nice people too.
Yeah.
So that was great. But again, totally different vibe, totally different audience, totally different vibe, you know, yeah. Different room.
It was funny for that, because you didn't know me from Adam at Damnation 2019. And I knew you through, well, in fact, you just played the stage. But
yeah,
and seen you at times, but I'd never had a chat with you, we'd never met, never shook hands or anything. So yeah, just before you went on to play me, then I was like, "Hi, I'm Gav." And I could see your face going, "Who the fuck's Gav?" Okay, that's fine then, that's fine, Joe. On you go, rock star. I'll just get back to my
festival. I'm so sorry. Jesus, that's the worst thing ever. Okay, well, I'm going to give you a massive socially distanced hug next time I see you. Sorry, I mean, I have to say, but just before I go on stage is never a good time, because I couldn't probably even tell you my own name at that point.
No, no, like, listen, I was only saying that it was a great set. I would never expected you to know who I was anyway, but just it was a, while we're here, you've made up for it. I noticed that you bought an item of merch, so.
Oh, yeah. I've got a t-shirt coming.
We'll call it one each. It's on route to you, so I appreciate the support for that as well. So that's your festival side of things. Let's say classical events. This is an opportunity for me to talk to somebody from the other side of things, or a different. I don't talk to jazz musicians or hip hop musicians. Or have you done the equivalent of what a Roadburn or a Damnation or a Download or a Art Tangent is in the classical scene? And if so, can you tell me about that and how it compares?
Yes and no. I mean, the thing is, The fence is difficult to cross from the other side. So basically, it may be different these days. But if you, so I have played concerts in the past. I'm not like Sheku Kenu Mason or one of these profoundly brilliant young cellists. I'm neither young nor brilliant, but I am a cellist. But I don't play, you know, Dvorak Concerto or Elgar or any of these types of things. I do play chamber music. I love to play chamber music. I love to play quartets, quintets. Occasionally I will do a recital with a friend of mine who's a pianist. I mean, it'll be stuff which is pretty accessible, really, I suppose, Rachmaninoff sonata, something like that. But the classical scene, it's quite interesting, because way back I had a PR agency who were rooted really in the classical side of things, but it was quite difficult for them to push me into that scene of things, because at that time, not saying it's now, but at that time, the classical world took a pretty dim view of artists who had, you know, dabbled in the occult of amplification, if you like. Now it's different, and I'm very, very privileged to have great support from people like Martin Handley at Radio 3, and I've got, I mean, you know, it's a wider thing. The Orchestra of Capella in Poland invite me to play, and they also play with Nigel Kennedy and people like that. But they invite me to play because they want to play a program of my music, and they are a Baroque classical orchestra. So we also play John Tavener's Sviati and some other classical things. But to me, music is music. If it's good, it doesn't matter. I mean, anything can be played. You can take a Bach chorale and play it with a black metal band or with a choir of angels, and it's the same piece of music, you see. It's just a really good piece of music.
Yeah.
So really, the only difference, I think, is mainly in the olden days, it's whether people were standing or sitting, and then it's just at the level at which it's performed at, volume, I mean, yeah. You know, but other than that, it's still music.
Because that was my question when I put to Hayden, like, so you're a guy who's got a roster and dealing with all these same events and same promoters and same sort of tour routes and et cetera, but now you've got Joe, what do you do there? Because this is, if Joe's like, well, you know what, I'm also accessible to this, completely different scene, and he was about, we're not there yet, but we're hoping to get there. So is that something you see in the future of, like, okay, well, there is a route here for as well to play more the classical damnation, whatever that is.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one. I mean, there you go, Gav. Maybe you could set that up, because, I mean, the classical, there isn't really, I mean, there are festivals, of course there are festivals for classical music. I think the part of the problem in the past, now I'm talking about something I'm not fully ensconced in this scene anymore, but from my experience, part of it, there's plenty of contemporary music festivals, but rather than, like with Damnation, the broad-mindedness of the crowd that attend your festival, with a contemporary music festival, you will really only be selling tickets to people who are very, very heavily into contemporary music, because some of it can be very challenging. Not in the same way, well, in the same way that some metal is challenging or some jazz can be very difficult to find your way into, but with the contemporary music, I've been in concerts where I've been playing my cello with the back of a teaspoon and stuff like that, and for me, even, that's far out, you know. I as a composer, even though I'm writing what is, if you like, new contemporary music, I know that if you can take, you must first take an audience by the hand and say, trust me, and then they will follow you. So you can't go kind of steaming in, you know, with all sorts of what I believe personally, compositionally, I would not present something which was extremely difficult, completely out of context. I would much rather say, this is the shape of the world I'm talking about with you, and this is some of the little bits and pieces, some of the landscapes, and this is now the finer details, rather than just kind of, you know, doing like a microscopic look at moss on a stone, musically speaking.
Yeah.
Whereas I think in the contemporary music scene, sometimes that is what happens, and so there's a bit of beard stroking that goes on. This is extreme generalization, so internet people don't like shoot me down in flames. This is just a very broad brush of.
Yeah, no.
Probably
I
don't that. Do it.
I get that. As you say, you're not in that scene as much these days. But do you know people for that scene that are looking at you and be like, "What the hell happened, Joe? Why are you the only person strolling at these metal festivals with an electric cello?" I mean, are people? Have you got friends that are classically trained? Or are people that are in that scene going, "What have you done?"
No, I mean, I've got a lot of friends who we grew up through the orchestras together, school orchestras and university and stuff, and they're all, that's great, good for you, you know. And then sometimes they will say, I'd love to do that, in which case I say to them, well, why don't you, you know, you know, because they, to them, it's for me, what they do is, you know, the precision of playing like a Mozart violin concerto is unparalleled. I can't imagine that I could ever do the equivalent on a cello. They couldn't imagine stepping on a stage in front of however many people at Hellfest and doing what I do. So it's a matter of, we have great respect for one another, and they are not mutually exclusive. For me, I mean, I still every day, more or less every day, I play Bach and Piatti and acoustic cello, and I not brilliantly, you know, but I play. Because the only reason I can do what I do on the electric cello is because I keep everything else going, the flame burning under everything else, like technically speaking. And even then, it's still, you know, I have to think carefully about what I'm doing a lot of the time, and it's never going to be perfect. But what I know is, as if you like, a classically trained musician, which is a phrase I hate, but we'll use it for now, that from tiny person all the way through, you know, through my degree, postgrad, everything else, that has served what I do now. So that's that work in the classical world means that I can go into someone's session and play something appropriate. I can go onto a stage and find my way out of a mess that I might have got myself into, harmonically speaking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, well, because I'm a bit like, that leads me to my next question. We've like, okay, well, you're here, you're playing the most prestigious slots at these events. So
thanks to you.
And I know that you don't want to be. I've listened to some of your interviews and you're reluctant to be called like breaking down the barriers or you're setting it up. But who is, okay, so next year I want to book another classical artist who can come in and do it, Joe Quayle did. Who is it? Who else is available?
Well, I mean, well, you could do much worse than Raphael Wentworth Brown, or I mean, he's a phenomenal cellist. You know, he plays with the Leprous and various people. I mean, there's lots of people around, right? There are a lot of people around who are great musicians. And obviously, I know most of them as cellists because that's my field, and we tend to be very supportive of one another. There's some great trombone players. I'm not talking about my trombonist, but other trombones. They're brilliant, but there's other fabulous trombone players. You just have to work a bit harder. I mean, if you do want to do that, tell me and I will give you some names. But
what I mean is, like, but you're already made, let's use the word brand again, like you used, you're already made brand. Like, you slot you into damnation, and you're right, people didn't raise eyebrows. People didn't say, why is Joe Quayle playing? People said, yes, let's go see Joe Quayle. And then people who then went investigated or researched and looked at it and said, yes, let's go see Joe Quayle. No one said who. No one said she doesn't belong at Damnation or what. So again, I'm sure there are plenty of fantastic classically trained artists as well. But why are you the only one that you can just go out and book?
I don't know. I mean, maybe do you think it's just because I've been doing it a long time? I don't know, Gav. I mean, it's okay, right? In the metal scene, it's people ask about this sometimes, but it's not a scene that I feel out of place in. But I realise that actually I'm about 20 years out of date. But other than that, it's fine, because basically that was always my thing anyway. I mean, when I was at university, when I was at Leeds, I was used to sit in a little room pretty much above the stage that I played on, presenting a metal show on student radio, you know. But for me, that covered Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Sabbath, you know, Golden Earring, whatever, Saxon, you know. That's my bag, basically. That's my jam. So that's why I say I'm 20 years out of date, because that's still my bag now.
Then in prison.
and then in prison now. I have finally got slightly more up to date. Yeah, it's amazing. But it's awful. You know, when people say, could you put a playlist together? I'm like, well, yeah, if it's from 1987, of course I can.
But you're not going to discover anything.
And Venom Prison.
Yes, and Venom Prison. So many bands you've toured with, though. So you, obviously, you, Mono, you go out with the quartet for Mono, but you played with Winterfelleth. You've done some stuff. You mentioned At the Gates. Did Hayden say in the podcast you were out with Caspian? So, tell me about, but how did this come about? Did people say, Jesus, please, Joe, come and bring this sort of music to us? Or does Hayden go and arrange it? How did these tools come about?
Well, I think it's a combination of everything. I mean, everything started for me with Caspian. So this is a case in point, actually. So that was Dunk Festival in Belgium, which is another wonderful festival, and big respect to them. This is very much more in the post-rock area of things. But they curate very carefully. They also take their risks, you know, and I was their risk back in 2014 or something. And they asked me to play. And anyway, so I played my set. And at the end of my set, I was first on the smallest tent, something like that, second one, you know. The end of, good, don't know why, the gods willed it that Phil, and I think Phil and Aaron from Caspian came and popped into my set. Anyway, at the end of it, Phil came up to me and he said, that was amazing, which is very kind of him. He said, will you, you know, my band are touring, my band's Caspian, and we're touring, you know, it's 2015, we're touring later on. You know, it'd be great if you'd be our support. And I said, wow, this, you know, this would be amazing. And then in my mind, I was thinking, yeah, that's like never going to happen in a million years. Anyway, lo and behold, I went on tour with Caspian, and they are my brothers, you know, they're my brothers now. So they kickstarted everything for me, really, because they took a chance, they took a risk. I'm a soloist, so yes, I mean, there's advantages to booking me. I'm quick on and off stage, and I don't sort of have like, you know, 14 drum risers to worry about. But so think the wheel began to turn. Because of Dunk, because of Caspian, other things. Hayden then comes along and he makes introduction to Mono, to Amelie as well. And so I've toured with her, you know, a lot. And all the artists I played with, the Joquel Quartet, I mean, that was, we were there for Mono. I think At the Gates got wind of it. Turns out, I know the drummer's wife very well from years back, you know, so this was very nice as well, nice connections, you know. And then other things, and then I work through Winterfinith, which came as a separate route. I then worked for producer Mark Minot, and then worked for My Dying Bride. And so, you know, again, it's like these little spider webs, very beautiful things, and they all reach out, and then you find everybody is connected one way or another.
And how do you get you could be booked and you can go out with Amon Ra and Boris, or Amon Ra and Envy, that amazing tour for next year. Or you can be booked and then you're, as you say, you're out with Mono, or you're playing as their band. Now they must be looking at what you can bring to the table, not with the expert eye that you're looking at it. So do you have much of a say in like, right, okay, you might want me to play on that track, but I can do much more on this because there's just so much more scope. And if so, is that the case? What sort of say do you have?
I mean, funnily enough, well, actually, I mean, Mono, I suppose less so. So when I would play with Mono, I'd support them and then I'd play with them and I would play Halcyon with them. And the reason for that really is because Halcyon, it's a very interesting track. It works perfectly well when they play it as a quartet. However, there is a very beautiful cello part that they wrote. And when I'm with them, I play that cello part, and that really is great to play. So there's less I can maneuver around with that, certainly, but there's less scope because it's quite set, it's quite solid. Whereas when I'm working with Amelie, for example, she although she will be very careful about what she's going to present on stage, and it'll be very well rehearsed, but in the creating prior to getting to the stage, huge flexibility, and we'll spend time trying things out, working around on things. I mean, I've even been with her when she's been writing a couple of tracks, so I've been privileged to see her process as well in writing. When people book me for a session, like some I've had recently, they've booked it because they say do what you like, here's my track, what can you bring? And they often will say, I don't want to give you too much direction, and then we can go from there. And it's not a case that I'll always like get it right first time, but I will have the freedom to make a suggestion from what I think is artistically and musically the strongest thing to do. But often when you know, it's very, you can begin to work when you have something from which you can start with. But when you've got blank page, like, it's a nightmare. So it's, in way, you might as well get something down. Then you can start to sculpt, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And is that surprised you that sort of, like, so there you are now on tour with a UK black metal band? Is that, as you say, you called it that spider web? It's like I've only been at this for 5 years and now I'm out touring with black metal bands, and has that been a surprise, or is it just kind of all now? Once you've walked into Hellfest and somebody else's slot, you can get that nothing else phases you.
Nothing phases me. I mean, actually, funnily enough, yeah, so to answer your question, no, I mean, it doesn't faze me, because these days I think I'm there for a particular reason. Okay, so I have enough experience now to know that, yeah, not everyone's going to like it. Of course they're not. But that's, you know, we're human beings, and that's the whole point. I mean, otherwise we'd all write the same piece of music and we all liked the same thing. So, but there will be people there who will be there because they do like the cello, or they like what I do, or they're prepared to give it a go. So I also think that it makes the power of, if you like, a full-on black metal or post-metal or whatever it is, the impact is huge when you have a juxtaposition. Yeah. You know, that's what makes music heavy, is basically to be able to sit it in contrast with something which is not heavy in that sense. So in these ways, like with Amon Ra, something we're talking, obviously the density of the many players and the tuning that they use and the volume and the precision. But even with them, if you take something like Bowden, you've got this tiny, tiny start point, you know, and then this wall of sound. So that's a little example of what, if you put me on a black metal tour, that's kind of what happens. You get this soft start, if you like, which then when the
cuts through the density a wee bit. Sometimes you get out, you just, because sometimes I made that point when I was talking to John for Maybe She Will, and I was only just talking about samples, not classical music, but just even a sample, something to just break up, if it's grindcore, whether it's post-rock, isn't it? Something to break up, to give it that sort of contrast, juxtaposition, as you say, where you're just getting something different, and then it allows the heavy bit to breathe and make it even heavier.
Strange. Absolutely, you're absolutely right. Yeah. It's the same, actually. Go on, sorry.
You finish, because I'm going to ask you about other bands. So you finish what you're saying.
No, I was just going back to what you were talking about with contemporary music, and I was just thinking, actually, that's what would make something successful in terms of classical contemporary music, for my taste, would be, it could be as avant-garde and as layered up and as microtonal as you liked, if it suddenly then broke down to even just a single note.
Yeah.
And then the piece could then travel up again and become very clustered and muddled and then break down. Or something very, 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 I don't know, you've just made me think of some things.
That's what's good about Amon Ra and Cult of Luna. That's what I like. But I don't know why that's my favourite type of album. But that something that starts, I don't know anything about music. I've had a screensaver face on for every time that you've mentioned baritones. And I'm like, right, okay, I'll nod at the right time and hopefully Joe will think I know what she's talking about. So you get that way. Amon Ra and Cult of Luna, it just seems like there's a simple layer.
Yes.
And it builds and it builds and it builds. Eight minutes later, as you say, it's just fucking the knock-off in the sound. And it's fantastic. Yeah. I love that. The, what I was going to ask you, because we're talking about black metal bands and what you can bring to the table, or what your style of music brings to the table, is there artists you listen to and say, oh my God, that would be, God, I'd love to add something to that live?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, really. I mean, quite often the textures are so dense that even in a live setting, it would be very difficult to add anything, because it would be very difficult tonally. It'd be a bit pointless. I mean, it would be for the theatre if it was for anything, because I mean, I would instinctively go for some of my sounds that I make that have got, for example, I've got a couple of sounds with a bottom octave which has got a lot of grit on it, so it's like a sub with claws, you know. That's the type of thing. But you've got a dude or dudess doing that anyway on the bass, you know, so it's not so much with them in a live setting. There's many of my colleagues do play with black metal bands, they play cello with black metal bands in studio or live very successfully, but I think that probably there would be moments, the like you're speaking about, the moments when perhaps there is something which is held rather than of high impact. That's when you could move some strings in and out of things, and you could provide something that's where instinctively I would probably look to go in, rather than the kind of full-on stuff, because there's I can do that, of course, but why, you know?
The space isn't there for you to allow it. It's not going to cut through, as you say, the density.
No.
Amon Ra, once Cult of Luna in full flow, I mean, unless you've got Julie Christmas's vocals, nothing's cutting through.
Exactly. Good point, you see. So, I mean, the only other way around that would be if there was an appropriate moment. If everything was going, you know, full on, and say, for example, we put in some really, really high, so the effect is on the other end, very, very high. I've got a technique that I use. Listen, I mean, I didn't invent it, but I use it a lot, like in mandrel cantus, other pieces, where it's the same note I'm playing on two different strings. So you're going to hear the same note, but then one of the strings I pull away a bit. So the note is a straight line, and then I go like this, and then sometimes it goes woo like that, and then it kind of comes out again like this. That cuts through, but yeah. That you wouldn't want to over egg the custard, you know. Yeah. So you just want to. There might be maybe 10 seconds at the end of a piece where you'd want that sort of effect. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You're
dealing with textures here, you know, more than anything.
Absolutely. Well, the endosygnus on Mariner, that's just a wall of noise, but it's everywhere. Yeah. I mean, you've got Julie, you've got the cult on it. I mean, it's perfection. It's perfection. So,
it is. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Absolutely love that. So listen, Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on and doing this. Let's wrap this up with your future. Everything goes, you've come out from a metal point of view, from nowhere. You've played all these events. You've been on the stage at Hellfest. You're commissioning music for Roadburn. You released a video came out today for Adderstone. And that was getting that, for me, it was like, if you could picture what I would imagine you'd like your future to look like, it would be that production, that stage, that Joe Quayle could go out and play to an audience of across the spectrum, 1,000 people, 1,500 people, whatever, and have that kind of production and do it. But then that's just me as a fan listening in. How do you see the future? What do you want to see happen?
Oh, well, you're spot on. I mean, that is what I would love. I would love to have a budget that allowed me to make a proper stage design, take David with me, have Cedric, have Simon, have my team on proper salaries, not just you're my mate, thank you salaries, you know, that's what I'd like. And they're good people. Honestly, Gav, they're good people, you know, and they're so patient with me. And one day I say to them, one day we'll have millions and then you'll have millions, all right? I promise you, I'm going to do my best. I'd like that. I'd like to do what I had planned to do actually in April on my own tour. And that was basically to do a tour where I can play my music as it is with electric cello, to have a little section of the concert where I can play acoustic cello. Maybe I can even play some bar for people, something like that. And I'd like to be able to continue my collaborations with these other musicians, with the orchestral, continue to write. I'm learning a lot about composition, funny enough. I want to write more for my orchestra. I want to write more for these trombone players. You know, there's many things I want to do. You know, this has been a year where I have had some time to learn some new skill, and I want to carry on doing that. Basically, I'm making people have a nice experience at a concert. Yeah.
Does it strike you as weird, or do you appreciate the fact that when you go out and do that and the electric bit gets taken out, it's acoustic, or you're playing a bit of back, you're going to be doing it to the guy in the Napalm Death t-shirt? Is it?
No, it's fine. You know, Metal Hammer reviewed and on the online gig, and I was doing Bark at that one. You know, this is why I love the metal scene, you know, because the Napalm Death t-shirt wearing man that you describe has broad mind, you know, and ears that listen to all sorts of things. And he will hear, doesn't matter if he knows it technically or not, doesn't matter, but he will know the intensity behind the music. So whether it's Johann Sebastian Bach or Napalm Death or me, there's the intensity, the intention of the composer is what makes this music, if you like, heavy, metal, whatever.
I love the fact that you're going to take this type of music to toilet venues in Glasgow where a merch table and some guy in a Napalm Death t-shirt is going to be loving it. And that guy will probably be me. So, listen, Joe, absolute pleasure. Is there anything else you want to add before we bid farewell?
No, I just want to say thank you so much to you, and thank you to Damnation. Thank you for just being, you know, having a bit of faith and giving me a slot, and then for chatting with me today, because like no one knows who I am from a bar of soap. So you will get people saying, you know, what the hell was that all about? But thank you. I really appreciate it.
They won't say that. They will know exactly who you are. And they've been asking for you, but it's been a pleasure. And thank you to Joe. All right. Until 2021, when we meet again.